Hey guys. So, I was listening to Rep Massey earlier take a minute on the floor there to say his piece on just what's going on in Congress these days.
Can we be honest with the American people about what's going on here? This is political theater. I'm going to call out both sides right here. It's all posturing. It's fake fighting. We all know where it ends up. This is Groundhog Day. I don't care if the Democrat is the speaker or Republican is the speaker.
They're just straight telling everybody to their faces things that I still, every once in a while, I just have to pinch myself. Like, am I awake right now? Am I in one of those dreams that I have? Is this happening in our reality?
There's no way that this winter is ever going to end.
We have Glenn Greenwald. There's like a viral post of his that's going around where he's talking about, you know, it's kind of weird how just everybody knows we don't really have a president right now. We just don't really have one.
This is a really unprecedented situation where we don't particularly know who the commander in chief of the United States is.
Seems to me, Megan, we're basically without a president right now.
Is he still the president? Who is the president of the United States?
We don't have one.
How strange is that?
How do you feel about Pennsylvania?
I'm not able to go out to crowds anymore. They don't keep the service unlimited.
No, why not?
Because it says too dangerous. No one gets to go out.
Not really. And everybody just kind of knows that. And we're all just kind of accepting it because there's a machine that's running our country.
He wasn't fit to be the nominee for an election in November, but apparently he's fit to be president of the United States until January.
To anybody with the slightest touch of Asperger's, there's no way to go along with this. It's just it doesn't make any logical sense. What I've been assured privately is that there is a team running the White House far better than Joe Biden, and that I'm supposed to be elated because of the high competency of the team that has effectively replaced the president. Now, these are levels of self-deception and self-justification that I just can't participate in.
And it's not our president. That's a tweet that's been sent out by one of the foremost major journalists that people actually know their full name.
But what's fascinating is that this is what I've called an anti-interesting event. The media is absolutely pathologically uninterested in the idea that we're in a half war with Russia and we don't know who the commander in chief is at a functional level, given the tiny window that we might have if nuclear weapons were used.
That's the level that things are currently at. And I just thought it might be nice for a few minutes to talk about the evolution of consciousness in terms of government systems and what people accept as reality at any given time. I talk a lot on this channel about the American Revolution and documents like the Declaration of Independence because I think they're really important markers in modern human history of the evolution of the concept of rights and liberties and freedoms and how people thought about these things over time. I think it's very important to understand that so we can understand where we are right now. And you know what they say about people who don't learn their history, they're doomed to repeat. There's a lot of things we don't want to repeat. I don't think people realize that. And so one of the modern criticisms that I see quite often, and especially lately for America's founding fathers, is this idea that it's all now been boiled down to they were just a bunch of wealthy merchant class people who didn't want to have to pay their taxes.
Summer, when you're being inundated with all this American bicentennial 4th of July brouhaha, don't forget what you're celebrating. It's a bunch of slave-owning, aristocratic white males didn't want to pay their taxes.
So it's either that or they just didn't do enough. There were more things that needed to be changed and they only changed so many things and it wasn't enough. But I feel like these hindsight arguments don't really recognize the consciousness level, the mindset of where people were at the time. It's like that scene out of The Matrix where Agent Smith says they tried to make a utopia, but it didn't work.
It was designed to be a perfect human world where everyone would be happy. It was a disaster. No one would accept the program.
They were already changing so many things that it's a surprise that it took and didn't actually go backwards into something much, much worse, because that has happened multiple times in the past where they've tried to make big changes and the big changes didn't work out. And so the thing swung back into an even worse tyranny than the one they were trying to have a revolution against. This is just a really hard, I'm listening to myself edit and I feel like I need to add something to try to clarify it, but it's a really hard thing to try to explain. So I don't know if this is going to come across well or not. When you look around today at some of the things that people accept, apathetically accept as okay, as true, not just as true, but as okay, all right? Then you really fully let that sink in and you go back and look at history again through that lens, you start to recognize, like, we're lucky we even got this far, okay? That is what you start to recognize. I mean, there has been so many crazy, ridiculous, superstitious, nonsensical things that have been fully full-on, not just believed by a majority of people, but acted upon as if that were true throughout time. It's pretty amazing.
We need food and water to survive. But if fallout settles on your food, the food itself isn't harmed or made radioactive, since radiation only damages living tissue. You simply remove the fallout particles using everyday methods of food preparation: peeling, wiping, or washing. Fallout swallowed accidentally with food or in drinking water would do you no immediate harm.
So that is what I'm trying to get across here. Like, we're lucky we got this far at all on these concepts. So I just don't think people recognize the level that things were at and the things that led to an American Declaration of Independence in the first place. Just throwing the tea in the harbor was a major act of defiance that today you probably think, oh, whatever, they just threw some tea in the harbor. You might get arrested for that. But this is something that they debated over for days and days beforehand, for hours and hours. There was much terror over making this decision because they knew that it would be considered treason and that they could all be rounded up and killed for it.
Made every effort to peaceably prevent the landing of the tea and paying of the duty. It is now our duty, the duty of every American, to oppose the tax upon tea.
So it wasn't just like a little idea someone had to be funny as a prank, ha ha. They debated over this for a very long while before it finally came down to that decision being made. And it was seen as a major act of treason. And America and Great Britain are irrevocably linked. The entire framework of America's existence is taken from its fight for independence from the British Crown, specifically, and a British aristocracy system that was insulating that crown. And so the American Declaration of Independence against King George III came infamously complete with a long train of abuses, which is described in specific detail as repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. And they capitalized the word tyranny. So the capital T, tyranny, that the colonies were suffering at the hands of the British Crown included all the things we learned about back in grade school, things like refusing to assent to laws necessary for the public good, forbidding governors to pass laws of immediate importance, which then amounted to large districts of people's representation in their government just basically becoming void. Representative houses of government were being dissolved repeatedly for opposing the king's invasion on people's rights. The king was obstructing justice, literally, by making judges dependent upon the crown's will alone for their tenure of office and for their salary. King erected a multitude of new offices and swarms of officers to harass people and eat out their substance. He quartered large bodies of armed troops and kept a standing army in the colonies in times of peace without legislative consent, which they wanted the colonies to pay for. And they rendered that military independent of and superior to the civil power in the colonies. They also accused the crown of giving British soldiers mock trials that would protect them from punishment for anything they did while they were on colonial soil.
Where arbitrary power sits upon her brazen throne and governs with an iron scepter. It is a hardship not to be endured.
cut off the colonies from trade with the whole rest of the world and imposed taxes on them repeatedly without their consent. Deprived in many cases of trial by jury. Some of them were being transported across the seas to have trials in England. Took away their charters, abolished their laws, fundamentally altering their forms of government, for exciting domestic insurrections among the people, plundering the seas, ravaging the coast, burning towns, destroying people's lives. It gets pretty serious there at the end. But these are all phrases directly out of the American Declaration of Independence. And so that's the point it got under King George III, where they declared, we are dissolving the bonds between us, in a very alchemical language that is used in the Declaration of Independence. The bonds are being dissolved. But it was over 100 years earlier in 1641, the year before the English Civil War officially broke out under King Charles I, that the House of Commons and the British Parliament of the day drew up what was then an unprecedented document, which they had delivered to their king, and also directed to be printed and handed out to people directly, if I recall correctly, called the Grand Remonstrance, wherein they laid out in very great detail and for many, many more pages their own version of the long train of abuses that they felt they were suffering under Charles I's rule. And this one is 204 items in all. So there's 27 things on the Declaration of Independence, right? Whole new country was founded on that. That's a list of 27. The British Parliament in 1641 came up with a list of 204 things, which I am not going to read all of that to you because it would probably take me an hour. It's a very long document, very detailed, of all the things that they said were happening at that time. And if you read through that list, though, you will find that within it are direct corollaries to the long train of abuses that were laid out in the American Declaration of Independence, and also the first 10 amendments in the Bill of Rights as well, which is part of what went into the decision, I think, to come up with a Bill of Rights to begin with. Because too many times they had seen these kinds of things going on in the history. And there is a huge difference, though, between, and it's not just the number of items, there's a huge difference between the American Declaration of Independence and the Grand Remonstrance, in that in the Declaration, they directly call out the king. They directly say, this is the king's tyranny. The king is directly responsible for these abuses. Whereas in the Grand Remonstrance of 1641, they continually have to defer it to the king's evil or venomous counselors. They don't directly accuse the king himself. So first of all, that is a difference in consciousness that took place over that time. Because at the time of 1641, no one was directly calling out the king and saying anything to him. De Quincey pointed out in his essay on the falsification of English history that the king was not allowed to ever be personally wrong. And people believed that. That was actually a belief that was held by people. As God's representative on earth, it's not possible for him to be personally directly wrong. And I've read writers of the time talking about this, that this is part of the system at that time, that the king cannot be wrong. It's baked into the government system of that time in England. I read this guy talking about how the king could still be held responsible, sort of, because if he orders somebody to kill someone else for him, then that guy can be held to the account of the law. But still not the king, though. See, that's just not how anything would ever work today. But in the 1640s, that's exactly how it worked. If the king ordered somebody to kill someone else, he cannot be held liable for that. The person who does the killing for the king, that's the guy that will be held responsible for that, because the king literally cannot. That is the level that they took this to. The power that that system was allowed to wield was that level of power over everyone. And I just don't think people recognize that that's where the system came from. We had to move past that as a people and recognize, like, okay, that's not right, though. It's not right that the king can't be held responsible for his own behavior. Like, but that's the level it was at. I don't think people realize things. Like, I didn't know this. I had to go dig in some very old history books that are written in very old English to find this out. Okay, but this is what people believed. So that's how the system was run. So that's where the American colonists were coming from, a system like that, where you have kings that are just, they're doing whatever the hell that they really want. And it's blatant and it's in everyone's face and there's nothing anyone can do about it. So when the American colonists said the king directly has done this, that was pretty groundbreaking. And it's hard to believe today, looking back on it, how groundbreaking that concept was. But it broke the freaking government. It broke the colonies away from the British crown. It broke everything for them to say, you have no power over me.
You have no power over me.
So I want to go over some of these things that are on the Grand Remonstrance. I've summed it up. I'm not going to read you 204 things, but I want you to see some of what was going on in 1641 so you can see the progression of how much worse things were like 130 years earlier that led to the English Civil War, that led to a king being beheaded in England. So the very first item on the Grand Remonstrance details how the king dissolved Parliament. And the repeated dissolving of parliaments is mentioned multiple times throughout this document, several more times, at least four more times. And that's because King Charles I did that a lot. He dissolved parliament at one point for so long during his reign that it's actually referred to in history books as the 11 years tyranny, wherein the king ruled over the nation from 1629 to 1640 without parliament, which is the longest such interval in modern English history that a king has done that. And this is somebody, again, this is an absolute monarch who believes himself ordained by God, and therefore he can do whatever he wants without having to answer to literally any other person on earth, because there's no one above him to stop him or check his power unless God shows up, because there is no human person on earth that's going to do anything to stop this guy. He's the king, and because in their system, he cannot be wrong. Charles I passed declarations that made petitions passed by Parliament destructive to themselves, as specifically mentioned with the 1628 Petition of Right, which they issued based on Magna Carta. It says, the Petition of Right, which was granted in full Parliament, blasted with an illegal declaration to make it destructive to itself, to the power of Parliament, to the liberty of the subject, and to that purpose printed with it. And the petition made of no use but to show the bold and presumptuous injustice of such ministers as durst break the laws and suppress the liberties of the kingdom after they had been so solemnly and evidently declared. So we try to declare our rights in this petition of right, which is what that document is. And it was blasted with an illegal declaration to make it destructive of itself. And then they blame that on ministers. King Charles I raised a standing army amongst the people and quartered large numbers of troops all over the country. He also confiscated the arms of the trained citizen militias, and then he stockpiled all of the country's gunpowder in the Tower of London and put a price on it so high that people couldn't afford to purchase it. So he effectively left, especially the poor people of the time, unable to defend themselves. He's accused of violating the rights of habeas corpus and trial by jury, as first embodied in the 1215 Magna Carta. And there are a whole bunch of mentionings of jurisdictions being stepped out of bounds on, all kinds of pretended courts, just all over the place. And he also had people jailed without bail and left some people to die in prison for charges they were not allowed any legal recourse to refute. And the courts were also loaded with judges and juries that were favorable to the crown and would do the king's bidding. And speaking of speech, Charles I forbade people to even speak of parliaments, which I'm sure some of them wanted to since they didn't have one for 11 years. They also accused the crown of publishing, quote, untrue and scandalous declarations to asperse Parliament's proceedings and some of their members unjustly, to make them odious and color the violence which was used against them with proclamations set out to the same purpose. So now they're accusing the system of publishing propaganda against Parliament outright. Then you've got so many items on this list regarding draining the finances from the country in ways that just make taxing people without their consent look like a cakewalk. Almost like the king just went and made himself a checklist of all the possible ways to take every cent of wealth and suck it out of the country for himself. He not only continued to collect something called tonnage and poundage dues, which was in direct violation of the Petition of Right of 1628, But worse, he went out of his way to actually bring back sometimes ancient customs as a new means of taxing people, in addition to creating new unheard of taxes. Things like ship money tax, which was placed on merchants supposedly to help guard the seas, but then they were left unguarded and many merchants were attacked by Turkish pirates, their ships seized, and they were forced into slavery. Charles I was also accused of requiring excessive taxes, including raising the prices in the official book of rates, which was a thing they had that set the value of goods, just to garner higher taxes. And some goods were even taxed to the point that the tax became more money than the value of the goods being taxed. Charles was selling monopolies for a premium to certain producers of common goods like salt, soap, leather, and wine, and then he would force ships to take their goods to monopolizer ports only. He also, he started giving people knighthoods so that he could collect a knighthood fee on it. And if you didn't show up to get your knighthood and pay your fee, you would be put in jail. Oh, and he was also selling government titles for money just outright. And he's accused of purposely engaging in unwinnable wars just to pass new taxes. So not having a war for any other reason than that. He also enlarged the boundaries of the royal forest, contrary to the Charter of the Forest of 1217, which gave freemen rights to access to parts of the forest. So he enlarged the boundaries of the royal forest much, much larger, and then would fine people for using it. He was also accused of using something called the Statute of Improvement to take large quantities of common grounds without anyone's consent. On top of all of that, he also began attempting to just force people to make loans to him, including a forced loan on the City of London, wherein he had a list drawn up of the names of wealthy aldermen that he deemed fit to lend the king money. And when the aldermen on the list refused to pay out that loan, they were sent to prison. It also says the seizing of the money and the bullion in the mint, and the whole kingdom liked to be robbed at once. Went in there and took it.
Double the taxes.
And in some ways, it got to the same point as it did with King John over 400 years earlier.
Triple the taxes!
Which many of you will know from the Disney Robin Hood cartoon was described as the worst.
He's sure to be known as John the First!
Before the passage of the Magna Carta, it had been written that, quote, many kings made frequent encroachments upon the liberties of their people, but especially King John made use of so many illegal devices to drain them of money.
As soon as he was king, John turned on the good nobles of the kingdom, stole their goods, and drove them out of England.
But wearied with intolerable oppressions, they resolved to oblige the king to grant them their liberties. And so they put out the Magna Carta, and the Charter of the Forest was part of that, and then they released it separately. Then they released the Magna Carta again in 1225. In fact, they released the Magna Carta or versions of it or things based on it, like the 1628 Petition of Right, multiple times throughout the years after Magna Carta was put down. And they were trying to make gains with that each time. So I thought it had only been put out in 1215 until I did more research and realized this, that they just re-release it when it's necessary. So maybe they should think about that again today. But once it circled back around to Charles I, forcing loans on people and knighthoods and with fees, and people didn't pay it, they were jailed without bail, and you're starting to get to a pretty dark place in the history of your system there and your monarchy.
Violence took the place of law. Extortion was praiseworthy. Justice was an abomination and innocence a crime.
And so it was really pretty bad. He was just doing whatever the hell he wanted, because who's going to tell him he can't? There's literally no one that can tell him he's wrong. It's a backbone of that system at that time. Oh, and because the king in England is also the, quote, supreme governor of the Church of England, he's the head of the church, and the crown and the church are united in that way. Instead of a separation of church and state, you have a unification of church and state. The crown was intermingled with all the religious and spiritual aspects of the church. So it was considered a royal subject of the realm's religious duty to say prayers for the royals as part of their church services. So they're literally required to pray for the crown at this time. So they have a spiritual tax, basically, that they are required to give. a prayer, a spiritual energy for that crown, for the king. But on top of that, Charles I also imposed new oaths on both clergy and lay people for, quote, the maintenance of their own tyranny, according to the Grand Remonstrance. And he had new liturgy drawn up to be read in church that went contrary to Parliament, to the people's rights and liberties, and to the established laws of England. And if the ministers refused to take these new oaths and lead the people in these new prayers, not only was an army raised to attempt to force them to do so, but they faced censures of a suspension and excommunication if they would not. I mean, there's even one in here that simply says, quote, the restraint of the liberties of the subjects in their habitation, trades, and other interests. So that's just your whole life. Your whole life is being screwed with by this guy in a costume. I mean, that's what's up in that system.
Check this out. This is by the 1730s. The legislature of England, wrote the London Journal, is the only power and the sole authority in England. The people have no voice over this supreme authority. To claim that they do is to speak of rebellion and of taking the government into their own hands. The power of the people extends only to the constituent act of establishing the government. When the government is settled and the power of legislation given to a body chosen to represent the community, then the original power of the people in their collective body ceases, for the sole power and the sole authority is invested in the persons chosen, who are to judge and act for all of us in a matter relating to legislation.
The London Journal defended corruption on one occasion as a fact of modern life, like the Standing Army and the Riot Act. It was a result of the present circumstances of the world, the natural condition of human affairs.
Wow.
So when you look at the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights, it's pretty easy to start matching up all the ways in which these inherent rights had a very long history of being violated by English kings. And so this is why you have a declaration that begins by defining what government is and what its purpose is and why it's instituted among men, and that it's only legitimate if it's by the consent of the governed, and that there is no other way for government to be legitimate except by the consent of the governed. And do you know why? It's because you're not a royal subject in the United States of America. You're a citizen. It's not the same thing. A royal subject, if you look up the definition of the word subject, a subject is that which is placed under the authority, dominion, control, or influence of something else or someone else. Specifically, one who is under the authority of a ruler and is governed by his laws, one who owes allegiance to a sovereign. The subject must obey his prince because God commands it. Human laws require it. So if you're a subject, you are not consenting to anything. You don't have to. Subjects don't have to consent. It's not required. You're just in that control. You do not have, the concept of consent is not there in that definition. You are placed under the authority of, you are born into a system where you just tell you what to do and you do it. That's how this works. When you're a subject, that's how it works. So I just think it's important for people to recognize where we've been, and to remember that's the thought process of people's minds at that time. It was a big deal to write the Grand Remonstrance, even if they tap danced around blaming the things they were saying on the king himself. It was still a really unprecedented, unheard of thing to write that document at that time. And I guess they handled the situation the way they did because they just could not figure out any other way to get the guy to stop. That's the only time in British history that a king has been beheaded. And to get to the point in 1776 where they're writing the American Declaration of Independence and they straight say, King, you're tyrannical. We're dissolving our bonds with you. We're just not going to have it anymore, period. This is over. Goodbye. We're breaking up with you. We want a divorce, you know. That was huge. That was not a heard of thing. So consciousness-wise, we evolved at that point. That's an evolution of belief. The people believed up until that point, as colonists, they were royal subjects of the king. And after that point, the bonds were dissolved and they said, no, this is the only way we will legitimize a government is under these conditions. So you can't do that to us anymore. and it changed everything. And yes, there was a war fought over that. But if we don't remember all of these things and we don't actually remember what happened, we have a very real situation ahead of us here in this new digital overlaid society of going back to something like that in a new form of digital tyranny. And it might not be kings, it might be corporations this time, but it's really not much different. You know, if the consequences of something you say on a social media platform is going to affect you in physical reality, then the rights need to work the same way. We need to have those rights be upheld on here as well. Because they're trying to do something now that is just, it's very one-sided and it does not respect individual rights and freedoms in the ways that it should. And if we're going to live in a world that's half online and half off, then the half that's online needs to match the half that's off in terms of people's rights. Their inherent rights, the ones we're born with, we didn't get them because they were written down on pieces of paper. Those pieces of paper, all these many hundreds of years, are just reminding the people in power how this actually works. Today, you wouldn't think it's okay for a king to do any of the things that I just said on that very long list of crazy things that he was doing. But at the time, there were a lot of people who lived in that situation who did think it was okay because they were under the misapprehension that simply because the guy's name is King whatever and they put a crown on his head, it means he could do whatever the hell he wants and no one can hold him responsible personally for anything that he does. And I'm not just talking about loyalists who benefited, like the actual people that were part of the aristocracy who benefited. There were people that were just such mental children that they refused to question the reality with which they were presented on whether or not that's real or not. Or just a guy in a costume is taking all your money in every possible way he can, and if you don't like it, puts you in jail so you can rot and die. I mean, that's pretty insane, right? But at the time, people thought that was okay. And today, we literally have a congressman asking people on social media, what will it take for them to withdraw their consent? I mean, it is unreal, the time that we are living in right now. It is unreal.
Mr. Speaker, I came here to make sure our republic doesn't die by unanimous consent in an empty chamber, and I request a recorded vote.
If you stop to actually think about the things that are happening right now, it's mind-blowing that this is the level we're at. I'm just going to play out the rest of his speech. Just listen to the rest of what he sat in front of everyone and said out loud, okay? And I love you guys. I'll talk to you soon.
Can we be honest with the American people about what's going on here? This is political theater. I'm going to call out both sides right here. It's all posturing. It's fake fighting. We all know where it ends up. This is Groundhog Day. I don't care if the Democrat is the speaker or Republican is the speaker. We always get a CR in September. And then we get an omnibus. Sometimes there's a twist on that. We might get the omnibus before Christmas, but if we're not good, it comes after Christmas. But that's what's going to happen. And in the meantime, it's political theater. You know, we've got some, it's good theater. We've got great writers. I wish they'd just come up with a new plot. It's the same plot every fiscal year. What should we be doing? It's already been discussed. We should have done 12 separate bills. We should have done 12 separate bills. But again, whether Democrats are in control or Republicans are in control, we never do the 12 separate bills. Why do we always spend at least as much as we did last year, and why do we never cut spending? It's because Democrats want to grow the welfare state, and Republicans want to grow the military-industrial complex. And we're eventually going to get together, and they're both going to go up. I guarantee it. And both parties are just fine letting the bureaucrats do their thing, which should be our thing according to Article 1, Section 8 in the Constitution. We are empowered with these things. Most important of the things we do is the funding, and that's the big lever we have. You know, I've sat through now almost 2 years of hearings in this Congress, where we've exposed lies at the CDC, shortcuts at the FDA, unconstitutional gun bans at the ATF, over-prosecution of January 6ers at the DOJ, targeting common citizens at the FBI, spying by the NSA, illegal mandates for livestock by the USDA, targeting plant vaccine or transgenic plant vaccine at the NSF, and censorship the censorship industrial complex at the end of which the NSF is part of, automobile kill switch at the DOT. Now, these are all things I think most Democrats are just fine with, this kind of totalitarian state that the bureaucrats are pushing on us. But Republicans at least pretend to be against these things. But what are we going to do this September? We're going to fund every freaking one of those things that we have exposed. That is the tool that we have, is the funding. Why are we funding things we don't like? We don't have to. Well, it's because we're addicted to spending. And this doesn't do anything about the addiction at all. So let me touch on one point too here that I think is important. Is, you know, a couple years ago, or a summer and a half ago, I suppose now, we did something where we allowed the debt limit to be increased. But as a condition of that, we said if you do a CR that lasts past April 30th, everything's going to get cut 1%. And that, to me, seemed like at least a little tinge of fiscal responsibility was creeping in. But now I notice that this CR, instead of going 1 year and giving us time to do the 12 appropriations bills, is going to go 6 months. Now, let me tell you what's going to happen because this goes 6 months. Number one, it ends in March 28th, on March 28th. Well, the automatic cuts happen on April 30th if the CR went past that. So that is exactly why the speaker chose a six-month CR. Is so we don't have even the chance, a threat to this town, it's a threat of a 1% cut. We don't want to even, this is like T-ball. The 1% cut is on the tee, and Republicans won't even swing at it. So instead, we're going to do a six-month CR instead of a one-year CR. That sets up this another crisis next spring where we can do another pretend fight sometime around March. And that fight it'll be the same fight regardless of who wins the presidency and who's in charge of the Senate and the House. And we're basically going to get pretty much the same result. But that's 6 months from now. In the meantime, we can kick the can down the road. All of these things that we've exposed and all of these hearings are going to continue to get funded. But wait, there's a bright, shiny object on this CR. I've never seen one of these. I have never seen a bright, shiny object attached to one of these must-pass bills. Oh, wait, no. It actually happens. There always is a bright, shiny object, a bauble, if you will. A little something to get excited about. This SAVE Act, it's going to save us all, right? And by the way, this is good political theater. I do like this part of it, that we're going to see almost every Democrat cast a vote so that illegals can vote in our elections. I mean, that's pretty clever on the part of our speaker to set that up, make you all take that vote. But here's what he's going to do after you take that vote. He's going to take it off. The bright, shiny object goes away. It's Lucy and the football again. And the American public is all revved up. Yeah, we're going to get to save that. We're going to save these elections. We're going to stop the illegals from voting. Really, how are you going to do that in like 6 weeks? I think they're already registered if they're going to vote. Some of them probably already voted. This SAVE Act ain't going to save anything. And particularly because it ain't ever going to become law. It's a false promise to get all the Republicans half pregnant. And then you're going to get fully pregnant by the end of September when you vote for this CR. That is not going to have this. I mean, I hate to break this to you. I mean, the Democrats already know this. I'm not telling you anything special. I hate to break it to the Republicans. You ain't getting the SAVE Act. It is not going to stay on this bill. Why? Because we're going to cave. Is it a fight worth having? Absolutely, it's a fight worth having. Make those Democrats say they want illegals to vote. Make them take that vote as many times as you can. And then make them go to the ballot box in November. But that's what it is. It's political theater, folks. We all know where it ends up. We've seen it. I've been here 12 years. I've seen it 12 times. I refuse to be a thespian in this failure theater. And with that, I yield back.
The Constitution and the Declaration of Independence can live only as long as they are enshrined in our hearts and minds. Whether we will preserve and extend popular liberty is a very serious question. But after all, it is a very old question. The men who signed the Declaration faced it. So did those who wrote the Constitution. But each succeeding generation has faced it. And so far, each succeeding generation has answered it in the affirmative.
I would like to solve the puzzle.